content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to our June 2024 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. The program is all about books available from the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services. Now, the library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library also has more than 11,000 patrons across the state, and if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program. This month, we'll look at some of the most popular books checked out in the month of May 2024 at the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. We begin with a book that was written a few years ago, but still continues to be very popular, especially this past month at the library. It's called The Morning Show Murders by Al Roker and Dick Lotke. Billy Blessing is riding high. He's good-looking, successful, and free to play the field. He's also the regular host of a cooking segment, Blessings in the Kitchen, on the popular morning show Wake Up America, and the owner of a profitable Manhattan bistro. Everything is most definitely going his way. However, there exists a thorn in his side by the name of Rudy Gallagher, his executive producer and general nemesis. Billy has plenty of reasons to dislike Rudy. At the moment, Rudy is dating Billy's ex-girlfriend and forces him to appear on a nonsensical reality show. The man loves to make Billy's life miserable. So it is when Rudy ends up dead. All signs point to Billy as the culprit. While Rudy was a general pain, he was certainly not enough of one to inspire murder in Billy. Unfortunately, after a run-in that morning over a new cooking reality show, Food School 101, Rudy dies from eating poisoned cocovan from Billy's restaurant. Now the police are closing down the establishment and rooting through every aspect of Billy's life. Fortunately for Billy, he is not the only one who might have wanted Rudy dead. Such that he was, Rudy made enemies wherever he went, and there were any number of people in the cutthroat world of morning television who might have had enough of his high-handed ways. However, the people who might have held a grudge against Rudy extend beyond the circle of morning television. Any number of women who are listed in his little black book and rated according to their looks and sexual prowess may have had a problem with Rudy. He has also just come back from an investigative reporting trip to Afghanistan, bringing back much intentional intrigue with him. How do you begin when there are more people who wanted the victim dead than those who didn't? Rudy isn't the only victim, though. When the killer strikes again, it is obvious that someone is setting up Billy to take the fall. If he wants to hold on to everything that is near and dear to him, particularly his freedom, Billy better switch his oven up to high heat and get to the bottom of the mysteries and scandals that are swirling around him. But as Billy gets closer and closer to the truth behind Rudy's murder, he moves from the scary realm of viable suspects to the even scarier world of moving target. Someone wants him out of the way, and they aren't playing around. The Morning Show Murders takes up behind the scene. It takes us behind the scenes of the cheery world of morning television, where we learn that appearances can be deceiving, and the biggest television personalities also have big egos to match. It would be interesting to know how much of this book is fact and how much is fiction. Al Roker is obviously eminently qualified to give us the picture of what goes on behind the cameras as well as in front of them after all his years in the business. And he works superbly with Dick Lochte, author of Sleeping Dog, in this thrilling tale of lights, cameras, and murder. And that, by the way, was a review that was written back in 2011 by Amy Taylor. And again, the name of that book was The Morning Show Murders by Al Roker and Dick Lochte. Now let's take a look at a book called Liar, and it's by Fern Michaels. Action, adventure, and a dash of mystery combine in this latest in the Lost and Found series from acclaimed number one New York Times bestselling author Fern Michaels as a brother and sister team find clues to a decades-old case hidden in an old armoire. Here's the plot. Luna Bodman always looks forward to a new shipment of furniture at the restoration shop. Her brother, Cullen, has a knack for finding discarded pieces with an intriguing history, and Luna likes to sit with each item to see if she can feel any kind of vibrations. Usually, Cullen does his thing while Luna does hers, but the arrival of an old armoire triggers a reaction in Luna that's impossible to ignore. From the moment Luna wiggles inside the armoire and closes her eyes, she feels an overpowering and disturbing sensation. Emerging, she asks for a flashlight and discovers words scraped into the wood. Help me. Hoping to uncover the piece's secrets, Luna contacts her good friend, U.S. Marshal Christopher Gaines, and the group sets out to trace the armoire's origins. The journey takes them to a military school in New England and a mysterious, long-ago ransom case. The kidnappers were never found, but decades later, the answers may finally be within reach. The book is called Liar! And it's by Fern Michaels. Now let's turn to a new book that's called The Teacher, and it's by Frieda McFadden. And I'm going to read a review that was done just a few months ago in 2024 by Rebecca Monroe. Here's the plot. Eve Bennett is always being told how lucky she is, and in many ways it's true. She has a beautiful home, a fulfilling career, a shoe collection that would rival a socialite's, and a drop-dead gorgeous husband, Nate, who is blessed not only in the looks department, but in the charm department as well. Every day he kisses her exactly once before they head to Kasem High School, where they work as teachers. Once when they get home and once in bed, they have sex on the first Saturday of every month and often entertain their shared friends for decadent home-cooked meals and wine. So why does Eve hope that every SUV she sees driving down the opposite side of the road will turn course and smash into them, ending it once and for all? Well, last year, Kasem High was rocked by a scandal when teacher Art Tuttle, a favorite among staff and students alike, was accused of spending just a little too much time with a student, Addie Severson. At first, his attention was innocent enough, extra tutoring sessions, a warm hand of encouragement on her shoulder, the occasional ride home when it was pouring. But then Addie was spotted lurking outside of Art's house. Although there was no evidence of anything illicit or illegal, the allegations were too big to overcome. Art was fired while Addie was left to become the social pariah of her school. It was never a secret among the staff that Addie was troubled, but where were her issues? Her issues were once concerning and endearing. She is now public enemy number one in Kasem. Even worse, Art was one of Eve's best friends. This year, Addie is in her math class and her husband's English class. But that's not all that has Eve worried. Nate, who even she can admit far outranks her in looks, has always been a dutiful, attentive, supportive partner. But lately, it's as if he can barely stand her. Eve not so secretly indulges in an expensive designer shoe habit, but her stilettos don't turn him on. They turn him away, in fact, way off, and awaiting the terrifying credit card bill at the end of every month is not helpful. Meanwhile, Addie is dreading the school year just as much as Eve. After getting everyone's favorite teacher fired, not to mention being perceived by fellow teens as having done it with an old guy, it's safe to say that she's at the bottom of the social hierarchy. Adding insult to injury, her former best friend and fellow loner, Hudson, has blossomed into movie star good looks and is now running with the school's queen bee. This leaves her completely isolated as she tries to deal with the increasing bullying of her peers and, strangely, Mrs. Bennett. The only bright spot in Addie's day is English class. She has heard that Mr. Bennett is gorgeous, but that's not the only thing that keeps her focused in class. Addie has long dreamed of being a writer, and he tells her that she is talented and invites her to join his poetry magazine. When it feels like the entire world distrusts her, Mr. Bennett makes her feel seen. With her marriage on the rocks and Addie distracting her at school, Eve falls further into her shopping addiction. At home, Nate pays less and less attention to her, often heading right to his office after work and ignoring her at dinner to look at his phone. It seems that the only time they connect is when they discuss school and Addie. Eve is aware that any connection to Addie is dangerous, but she doesn't know yet if Art was truly innocent or if Addie simply wanted to ruin a man's life. Whatever the case, Addie clearly has her sights set on Nate. Eve will die, or maybe even kill, before she lets this disturbed, troubled girl ruin either of their lives. But who is really in control here, and what will happen when the power dynamic is upset? This fast-paced, riveting, and totally shocking thriller could pull even the most drained reader out of a slump. It seems wrong to describe a book featuring murder, revenge, and abusive power structures as fun, yet that's exactly what The Teacher is. McFadden deals out twists and turns like no one's business, and her characters are never, ever what they seem. Dark, scheming, and manipulative, even at their best, they are deliciously bad, and the plot is blink and you'll miss it good. The result is intoxicating, the kind of book you'll read in one sitting and then wish you'd slowed down to savor. Yes, there are some plot holes and a few instances where you'll have to agree to disagree with the author's conclusions, but these minor flaws don't even matter in the face of the book's shocking reveals. Freda McFadden is at the top of her game, and The Teacher is the most fun you'll have reading a thriller this year. That review was written by Rebecca Monroe in February of this year, 2024. And once again, the book is called The Teacher by Freda McFadden. Now let's turn to another very popular author. We read about his books frequently on this program. It's called The Number One Lawyer, and it's by James Patterson. The writing machine that is James Patterson continues to roll forward with bestseller after bestseller. Add to that number his latest release, a standalone thriller that he wrote with Nancy Allen. Here's the plot. The action in The Number One Lawyer begins immediately and never lets up. Stafford Lee Penny, Mississippi's number one lawyer, is defending Daniel Caro, a well-respected OBGYN who has been accused of having an affair with one of his patients, a young black woman named Aurora Gates. When Caro tried to break things off with the now pregnant Aurora, she was found floating in the nearby river, shot and brutalized, with both her and the fetus deceased. Well, making things worse for Penny is that District Attorney Henry Gordon James is Aurora's uncle and is obviously gunning for Caro's scalp, despite Penny's undefeated record in the courtroom. Good defense attorneys typically do not care if their clients are guilty or not. They're there to seek justice through the legal system and put the burden of proof squarely on the prosecution. That is definitely the case here, especially since Penny is feeling the pressure of defending a man whose father, Hiram Caro, was part of the Dixie Mafia and a local casino owner. The DA is seeking a double murder conviction. Penny's two closest friends, fellow attorney Mason Burnett and his personal private detective, Jenny Glazer, are there for him throughout the proceedings. He also must deal with his crumbling marriage to Carrie Ann, from whom he is now separated. Add to that some visitations from Hiram's heavies with threats that Penny step up his game to assure a win, and our hero is one extremely stressed-out individual. The case is wild and intense, with surprises around every corner that I will not give away here. When Jenny reports that there was a similar situation with the same M.O. involving another female patient of Caro's, the elements of morals and ethics begin to prey upon the defense team. The verdict comes back as not guilty on all counts, and the doctor is a free man. However, readers will note that this occurs not even at the midway point of the novel, and more excitement is sure to follow. Excitement is an understatement. Not long after the verdict has gone public, another tragedy rocks the area in the form of a three-victim body count. Aurora's father breaks into Penny's home and shoots Carrie Ann and the local high school football coach with whom she had been sleeping before turning the gun on himself. Penny is deeply affected by this, and his world goes off the tracks as he dives to the bottom of every liquor bottle he can find, resulting in Mason and Jenny getting him placed in expensive rehab. When Penny comes out, he is clean but is no longer able to function as a full-time attorney. He ends up becoming a lifeguard for half the week and working the other half as a part-time, usually ineffective, defense attorney. Just when things couldn't get much worse for him, his intern, Rue, is accused of killing Caro's wife. Now everything is reopened in both cases, and Penny suddenly finds himself fighting for his own life, as suspicion in the triple homicide and this latest murder all seems to be implicating him as the central figure. Can the number one lawyer in Mississippi get his act together and defend himself in court against a DA looking to crucify him? Patterson knows how to entertain readers, whether he is writing solo or with one of his many co-authors, and The Number One Lawyer is no exception. Just when you think you have figured this one out, there is another trick up Patterson and Allen's sleeve to keep your head spinning right up until the end. And this was a review by Ray Palin in March of this year, 2024. So this is a brand new book, and it's very popular. Once again, the book is called The Number One Lawyer, and it's by James Patterson, co-written with Nancy Allen. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks for joining me today. Hope you're enjoying the program. Now we're going to turn to something. This is a little bit different this time around. This is actually a series of radio programs. It's called The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, Volume 1, Hollywood 360 Classic Radio Collection. And it was released in September of 2015 by Hollywood 360. This is a series that was created in 1934 by American mystery author Rex Stout. Nero Wolfe is one of the most iconic private investigators in crime fiction. As Watson did for Holmes, Archie Goodwin, Wolfe's confidential assistant, narrates the cases of the detective genius. Wolfe was an armchair detective who rarely left his luxurious brownstone in New York, so Archie would collect the facts and then report back to him. Wolfe would probably not have taken on many cases had he not needed his client's money to pay for his two true passions, fine food and his orchid collection. Nero Wolfe first appeared on the radio on July 5th, 1943, in a short-lived NBC series starring Santos Ortega as Wolfe with Louis Van Ruten as Archie. The second series aired during 1945 on the Mutual Network, and it starred Francis X. Bushman with Elliot Lewis as Archie. The third and most successful incarnation came to radio in 1950. It starred Sidney Greenstreet as Wolfe, with part of Archie voiced by several actors, including Lawrence Dobkin, Gerald Moore, and Harry Bartell. Very familiar name from the past. You can enjoy 12 of the finest radio episodes of The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet, who is perhaps best known for playing Casper Gutman, the villain opposite Humphrey Bogart in the film The Maltese Falcon. This collection was one of the most listened to books, or in this case, radio series collections at the library this past month. I think you might enjoy it. The episodes include things like Stamped for Murder, The Case of the Careless Cleaner, The Case of the Beautiful Archer, The Case of the Brave Rabbit, The Case of the Impolite Core, The Girl Who Cried Wolf, and there are about six more, and they all sound pretty exciting. Once again, it is called The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, Volume 1, Hollywood 360 Classic Radio Collection. And it says the New Adventures, but of course this dates back to World War II era, first put on the radio in 1943. The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe. Now let's talk about a book called Day Zero. It's a Jericho Quinn thriller by Mark Cameron. Special Agent Jericho Quinn is a wanted man, suspected of murder and marked for death by a network of conspirators embedded in the White House. Quinn knows he has to get out of the country fast before a team of contract killers find him and his daughter. To set things right at home, he'll have to take a nonstop flight from Anchorage, Alaska to Vladivostok, Russia, aboard a massive Airbus A380. But soon after takeoff, it becomes apparent that Quinn and his daughter picked the wrong plane. First, a passenger is brutally murdered. Then, Quinn is mistaken as a terrorist by an off-duty air marshal. As panic spreads through the plane and pressure builds to the screaming point, the unthinkable happens. Someone triggers a bomb. Spoiler alert, this plane is in big trouble. It's called Day Zero, a Jericho Quinn thriller by Mark Cameron. And just a couple of words about Mark Cameron, the New York Times bestselling author. Cameron, a Jericho Quinn thriller series, it debuted back in 2011, and since then he's written 8 Quinn novels and 4 Arliss Cutter novels featuring a deputy U.S. Marshal based in Alaska, including Cold Snap and Breakneck. Mark is also the author of 6 Tom Clancy Jack Ryan novels for the Tom Clancy estate, and they include Red Winter and Command and Controlled. All some information for you about the author Mark Cameron. Now let's turn to a very popular book by a very popular author. This is The Women by Kristen Hanna. From master storyteller Kristen Hanna, the number one New York Times bestselling author of The Nightingale and The Four Winds, comes a story of a turbulent, transformative era in America, the 1960s. The Women is that rarest of novels, at once an intimate portrait of a woman coming of age in a dangerous time and an epic tale of a nation divided by war and broken by politics, of a generation both fueled by dreams and lost on the battlefield. Women can be heroes, too, when 20-year-old nursing student Frances Frankie McGrath hears these unexpected words. It is a revelation. Raised on idyllic Coronado Island and sheltered by her conservative parents, she's always prided herself on doing the right thing, being a good girl. But in 1965, the world is changing, and she suddenly imagines a different choice for her life. When her brother ships out to serve in Vietnam, she impulsively joins the Army Nurse Corps and follows his path. As green and inexperienced as the men sent to Vietnam to fight, Frankie is overwhelmed by the chaos and destruction of war, as well as the unexpected trauma of coming home to a changed and politically divided America. The Women is the story of one woman gone to war, but it shines a light on the story of all women who put themselves in harm's way to help others. Women whose sacrifice and commitment to their country has all too often been forgotten. A novel of searing insight and lyric beauty, The Women is a profoundly emotional, richly drawn story with a memorable heroine whose extraordinary idealism and courage under fire define a generation. Once again, it's called The Women by Kristen Hanna. And that's all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services, simply Google or search Accessible Books North Carolina Library, or you can call toll-free 888-388-2460. You can use that same number and website to join the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina. It's that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after this broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.